This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. 10 years after the Great Recession, North Carolina's economy is back on its feet by many measures. Unemployment is down, business activity is growing, but not everyone has experienced the recovery the same way. According to a new report from the Budget and Tax Center, a project of the Progressive North Carolina Justice Center, there are still a number of economic inequalities that persist in this state, many of them amplified in communities of color. Patrick McHugh is an economic analyst with the Budget and Tax Center, and he joins us now to tell us more. Patrick, welcome. Good to have you here.
Absolutely. Good to see you, Frank.
Tell us more. Remind us of how bad it was. This is the worst, really, depression since the Great Depression of the 30s.
That's absolutely right, and I think that's one of the things that a lot of folks, it's starting to recede into memory a little bit, and some of the trauma of what that looked like is not top of mind, at least for some folks. A lot of folks, it's still very much top of mind. A lot of communities, you don't need to remind them. But yeah, as you say, this wasn't some garden variety recession. This was a recession born in the financial sector, which is, what turned something from a normal recession into a sort of system-threatening cataclysm. And that's what this was. So in North Carolina, we were tooling along, not to say that we had no problems, but, we were 5% unemployment. There was a lot of growth going on in the state. And then from the end of 2007 through 2009, 2010, we lost hundreds of thousands of jobs. So the number of unemployed folks in North Carolina went from the mid 200,000s up over 500,000. Mm-hmm. So it more than doubled the number of folks that were actively looking for work. And actually, in the reality, it was even worse than that, because a lot of folks just couldn't find a job opportunity anywhere in their community. So they even stopped looking. So the official numbers don't even really reflect how bad it was. And in many regards, North Carolina, we didn't have the roughest go of it nationwide. There were other states, Nevada, Florida, places where the housing boom or, bubble was particularly bad, took it on the chin even worse. But North Carolina took it worse than the nation did. Our unemployment rate topped out at about 11% or over 11% in early 2010. The national rate never got really much above 10%. And that's a lot of it's rooted in the fact that we have a manufacturing-based economy, and a manufacturing-based economy. I mean, it's not the only sector, obviously, that our economy is based on. But when you have a recession and when you have a collapse of consumer demand, manufacturing kind of takes it on the chin faster and more dramatically than a lot of other sectors. And so we saw that in North Carolina when, when the wind started blowing, it hit us really, really hard.
But as you say, and as all the indicators would indicate, things are going pretty well now. Unemployment is down, and we median income is up. We're doing pretty well.
Well, I think that's the question, right? Are we doing pretty well, or are we simply doing better than we were? First of all, I think it's important to really face the fact that all of the most fundamental economic problems that we had before the recession have either stayed the same or gotten worse. We haven't actually solved any of the fundamental problems that we had before. So to say that we're doing pretty well, I mean, yes, it's certainly better than it was in the dark days of 2008, 2009, 2010. But that doesn't mean that we've actually addressed the real problems that we already had before the recession started. And secondly, I think it's fine to acknowledge and to be happy and celebrate the fact that we're no longer facing the sort of cataclysm that we were dealing with in the early aughts, or in the late aughts and early tens. But there's a lot of folks out there that are trying to make it sound like everything is great. Everything is completely hunky-dory. That North Carolina's got one of the best economies in the country. And yeah, we're not the worst off in the country, but it's not true to maintain that we have one of the best economies.
Well,
in the country.
Your report points to those who are really left behind and who didn't come along at all, and in fact, whose situation in some cases is worse. So tell us about what you found.
So there's a whole number of things that, as I said, many of the fundamental problems that we have that we had before the recession haven't gone away. So income inequality has continued to expand in North Carolina. If you look at, first of all, the sort of, 1% versus everybody else, the investor class versus everybody else, the stock market took it on the chin initially, but it's bounced back and has been on a historic run for the last several years. I mean, we keep hearing, oh, the Dow Jones hit a new record high, as if that means something to everybody.
Well, it means something to 1% of the population.
It means something to some folks. But, when you actually look at real wages, they're either essentially flat or down. And even when you look only within folks that work for a living, that earn wages, The wage growth that is there is all concentrated at the very top end. So the top 10% of wage earners in North Carolina have seen a real inflation-adjusted improvement in their hourly wage of about $5 an hour compared to where we were before the recession. But when you look at the middle of the distribution, folks are basically flat. I mean, at most, you know, 50 cents per hour, something like that. And at the bottom end of the income distribution, the wage distribution, the buying power of folks has actually gone down compared to where we were before the recession. So there is the 1% versus everybody else, or the 0.1% versus everybody else. But there's also sort of a growing income inequality even within wage earners in North Carolina. So that's the first thing. Second is, when we talk about North Carolina having a good job creation track record, really we're talking about a handful of metropolitan areas. I think over 80% of the jobs that were created in the last year were created in five metro areas around the state. We still have half the counties in North Carolina still have fewer folks working today than they did before the recession. So again, a lot of those trends were ongoing before the recession. You know, a lot of those communities were manufacturing-based communities that had struggled when NAFTA was implemented, that had been struggling with offshoring for a variety of reasons. And even though manufacturing is still very alive in North Carolina, I think there's, you know, unfortunately folks tend to, you know, put it out as if we don't make anything in the state anymore, and that's not true. But the footprint, the employment footprint of that isn't nearly where it used to be.
Well, let's talk about some of the fundamentals and take a look at these and break it down a little bit, because as you said, you know, unemployment, things were actually moving along pretty well before 2008 in North Carolina, and then there has been a recovery. Income inequality has at least stayed the same, if not gotten worse, so we'll talk about that, and of course unemployment is still a problem. There are those who would argue that thank goodness we cut taxes in this state and cut business regulation, because were it not for that, the growth that we've experienced since 2008 would not have been as robust. What about that?
Well, that is one of the most pernicious myths that's currently out there about the North Carolina economy, that somehow the tax cuts that we started passing in 2013 made us into a national leader. First of all, it didn't. Last year, we fell behind several of our neighbor states. Maryland grew faster, South Carolina grew faster, Georgia grew faster, Florida grew faster. And none of those states have embarked on the type of tax cutting rash that we've gone through over the last several years. So if it was the magic elixir, even compared to our immediate neighbors, we shouldn't be seeing that. And secondly, if you actually look at other states that have taken very, very different approaches to taxing and investing in their economies, we've actually fallen behind California, Oregon, Washington, Massachusetts.
What are they doing that we're not?
Well, there's a variety of things. So, I do want to say that, you know, clearly you don't want to say it's an easy apples-to-apples comparison between North Carolina and West Coast states. So there are some differences there. But specifically on this point about whether tax cuts or tax policy, state tax policy, is the magic elixir that makes states either prosperous or destitute. At the same time that North Carolina was cutting taxes on wealthy people and wealthy corporations, California was actually increasing taxes on their wealthiest residents. You know, we all had budget problems at that time. Every state had a budget problem, you know, because of the recession. California chose to close their budget, at least part of their budget hole, by increasing taxes on their most fortunate residents. And again, they've outgrown us since that happened. So again, I don't want to say that's a natural experiment, because there's a lot of other differences, but
and in places, just to point out, California is very far away, but our regional neighbors, who may not have increased taxes but didn't cut taxes quite as much, they're still doing better than us.
Many of them are still doing better than us.
So what about just one more question before we close here, because I want to talk about some of the impacts of this as well. But job creation is a tough nut to crack and difficult subject to talk about, since we're losing so many to technology. Mechanization and automation is putting a lot of people out of the work almost permanently, and it's working its way up the income chain. Is there anything that we can do as a public policy matter to address that, or is that just what we're living with new technology?
Well, you're asking a really tough question, and that's definitely something that a lot of folks are trying to figure out what the right answer is to. And I'm not going to sit here and say that we know exactly what to do about the future of work and automation eating into what had traditionally been types of work that was done by human beings. But I will say, first of all, we have to get real serious about the severity of the problem that you're putting your finger on. This, in some ways, is a problem that, yes, was there before the recession, but in many ways has profoundly expanded. As you say, it used to be automation was something you saw in manufacturing, but now we're starting to see it in legal services, healthcare, a whole range of industries. So one of the things that I think is something we need to really seriously look at in North Carolina, both from an income inequality point of view and to contend with this this problem that's coming down the pike, is we've got a good community college system. We had a very good community college system. But the vast majority of the jobs that are going to exist in 10, 15, 20 years don't even really exist yet, let alone do we have the programs in our community college and our technical training systems to actually prepare people for that. So we're going to have to re-engineer our education system really from the top to the bottom to match a world in which you're always going to have to be learning. You're always going to be having to improve your skill.
Income disparities most pronounced along racial lines.
This is absolutely true. This is absolutely true. And this is, again, something that was certainly true before the Great Recession and remains with us today. And something that, you know, simply slashing taxes on folks at the top hasn't addressed. You know, we looked at in 2016, the hourly wage gap between the average white worker in North Carolina and the average African-American worker was $3.25 an hour. That may not sound like a huge amount, but it is profound how rapidly that starts to escalate into intergenerational differences in wealth and assets. So, you know, at the end of an hour, a white worker has enough extra money to buy a cup of coffee. By the end of the day, you're up to about $26. That's enough for dinner, you know, either for your whole family at home or a nice dinner out. By the end of the week, you're up to $130 difference. That could be your internet, your cell phone, your cable package, you know, whatever you like. By the end of 1 month, that gap is up to $585. So that's rent on an apartment or a condo. Mm. By the end of a year, you're up to $6,700. So that's a pretty nice used car by the time you're just 1 year in, just 1 year of that wage gap. By the end of a decade, if we stay at this level, that gap will translate into a $67,000 difference between the average white worker.
So now you're talking about investment possibilities. We have to close now, but now you're talking about real wealth and not just income, and that's the difference.
You're talking about a house or an education.
Patrick McHugh is an economic analyst with the Progressive North Carolina Justice Center's Budget and Tax Center. Great Recession had damaging effects on employment, mortgages, and retirement accounts. People sunk into poverty. Poverty is more than just economic consequences. It also affects health, and the effects are amplified when it comes to communities of color. Wisdom Powell is the director of the University of Connecticut's Health Disparities Institute, also a former professor at the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill's Gillings School of Global Public Health. And she joins us now. Wisdom Powell, welcome back to The State of Things.
Thanks for having me on, Frank.
Let's talk more about the, you know, we've talked to Patrick McHugh here talking about wealth disparities, and that leads to health disparities. Talk about, let's be very specific about this. Let's say job loss and its effect on mental health.
Yeah, so I think the appropriate way to think about the impact of economic strain on mental health is to think about it as a stressor. And we know that the literature is fairly well established linking stress exposure, both chronic and acute, to poor mental health, more depression, more suicidal ideation, more anxiety. And so for individuals who experience job loss, and this, of course, there are great individual differences in how people respond to economic strain. But at a general level, what we have observed at a population level is that individuals do experience those more negative mental health outcomes as a consequence of things like job loss.
And your work focuses largely on Black men and boys, and you found that these populations are affected differently than other groups when it comes to economic change. So give us an overview.
Well, I mean, I think if we start out with a general picture, economic picture for boys and men of color in our nation, we see that relative to their non-Hispanic white counterparts, that they face more economic, you know, barriers to the opportunity landscape. And so if you start there, that men, and boys are already far behind others with respect to economic upward mobility, then you and layer on top of that a recession or, you know, in job loss, the consequences are, you know, quite profound for that population. And what we know is that among boys and men of color in the United States, that those opportunities are hard to come by for a number of reasons that, you know, have already been fairly well established in the literature, like discrimination and racial profiling and things that sort of lock them out of the opportunity landscape in unique ways.
Now, we're seeing, too, the White House is now siding with some states who want to impose more barriers for Medicaid by imposing a work standard for jobs that may not be there. I mean, I wonder what your take on how that would have, what impact that would have on both health and the ability to build wealth in poor communities.
Well, the saying, the adage that health is wealth is very, very true. It's very hard to imagine being able to be a viable employee if you're facing chronic or persistent health conditions. And we know that, you know, childless men in our country really didn't have access to public health insurance in the way that women with children did. And so Medicaid, especially in states that chose to expand it, experienced an uptick in the insurance rates among childless men. And, you know, when those opportunities present themselves in those forms of policies, what we see are also opportunities for men to get access to care, to get more preventive screening. And so there is a linkage, right? So if you're not receiving employer-based insurance and you're relying on a public system, there is a, you know, possibility that those kinds of job loss exposures can impact both your insurability over the long term, especially if you don't have access to public programs like Medicaid.
And we were talking earlier about that report from the North Carolina Justice Center and that average disparity between African-American workers and white workers, $3.25 an hour. Patrick McHugh takes us up the throughout the year and find out we have some investable income by the end of the year, potentially. How does a disparity like that, $3.25 an hour, as you see its impact over the course of a year and then 10 years, affect health?
Well, I think that what we have to be able to translate that dollar amount into is what it buys for you, as Patrick did in the last segment. So having more expendable income, expendable income allows you to prepare for chronic health issues or an emergency room visit or any sort of unexpected health event. And if you don't have that reserve, then when you face a health event, it totally takes out your bottom, you know, affects your bottom line, your monthly bottom line. So that's the difference between being able to, buy a medication, for example, or, you know, pay for the extra bill that comes after you've gone to the emergency room for urgent treatment. So I think that, you know, those wealth inequalities easily translate into health consequences if we look at it just basic, you know, at the basic level of how it affects people's capacity to navigate healthcare systems.
Is there any impact on your knowledge of the fact? Certainly people are aware of the fact that they're being discriminated against. They understand at some level these kinds of disparities, both at the social and economic level. Does that have an impact on health and psychological health?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the perception of being of unbiased or unfair treatment in of itself has a significant mental health impact. We see associations between those kinds of perceptions and, for instance, more depression, which is, you know, as we know, are one of the leading causes of disability in the world. So, yes, there is a direct linkage between those exposures and, you know, poor mental health that we have been able to, you know, quantify and observe. And the issue there is that what happens when an individual is faced with economic strain is that you are limited in your cognitive and emotional bandwidth, right? So you're kind of in what some researchers have described as a tunnel. It means that every single thing you're thinking about within a course of navigating a day is about how do you get by. And that leaves less cognitive and emotional bandwidth for coping, for creativity, and, you know, really for family participation. So I think that putting in that framework helps to paint a broader picture of how serious of a consequence these kinds of economic strains can be for individuals and their families.
Wisdom Powell, always great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Frank. Thank you.
Wisdom Powell, director of the University of Connecticut's Health Disparities Institute. There is more of the state of things ahead. Stay tuned.